This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Roshan and Noel. In about half an hour, we're going to be speaking with Dr. Kuljit Singh, president of the Association of Private Hospitals of Malaysia, on the nationalisation of private healthcare. And we're asking you as well on the BFM Twitter account, that's at BFM Radio, in your view, which global power is more influential in Southeast Asia? Do tell us why. Is it US? Is it China? Is it something else? Or are you not sure? But in the meantime, we are looking at the fact that over the past few weeks, there have been conversations going on in the business community that Malaysia's been losing out as a choice destination for foreign investment. Now, this is on the back of a UN Trade Agency report, which highlighted that three countries, namely Singapore, Indonesia and Vietnam, received more than 80% of the record $156 billion in FDI that ASEAN countries recorded in 2019.
However, only 5%, or just ₱32 billion, went to Malaysia. There are also recent news of Hyundai closing its regional headquarters and trading academy here and moving to Indonesia. All this naturally has raised questions about Malaysia's level of attractiveness to foreign companies, especially since there has been the reimposition of a stricter MCO and as well as the declaration of emergency.
So for more on this morning, we have on the line with us Dr. Jeffrey Williams, professor at the Malaysia University of Science and Technology. Professor, thanks so much for speaking with us today. What would be the main prevailing factors pushing foreign investors away from Malaysia at this point?
Hi, good morning. I think the answer is that investors look for returns, and they're looking for long, in terms of foreign direct investment, they're looking for long-term risk-adjusted returns. And they are seeing in other markets better opportunities to get higher long-term risk-adjusted returns. Some of the drivers of that are issues to do with scale. For example, Malaysia is actually a relatively small economy globally. It's about 30 million people. Countries like Indonesia, for example, is 9 times the population. So these economies have a much greater domestic market. They have a much bigger potential workforce. The production capacities can be much greater in these countries. And now they're increasingly more open to finance, and the financial community are more familiar with countries like Vietnam and Indonesia than they have been in the past. And many of the government policies are very attractive. So I think in terms of making long-term foreign direct investment decisions, which involve tens of billions of US dollars over the long term, it really is looking for higher returns. And growth is also an extremely important issue. As Malaysia matures as an economy,
does the declaration of emergency and MCO raise our country risk and therefore further reduce our risk-adjusted returns?
Well, I think there were two issues. It's the MCO actually that has the impact on the economy, because the longer the MCO lasts, as we saw when it was first introduced last March, the longer it lasts, the greater is the damage to the economy. And unfortunately, it's rather confusing because the government has said it would last for 2 weeks, but then the Director General for Health yesterday indicated it might be 4 weeks or 12 weeks. So that doesn't help in terms of business planning. But the state of emergency, declaration of a state of emergency, is a different matter. And actually, I think it's less alarming than some people think, because to have a state of emergency is not that unusual. They had one in France, they had one in Spain. Last week, they announced one in Quebec, in Canada, New Zealand had one. And in principle, provided the powers that the government have been given under the state of emergency are focused on economic recovery and dealing with the pandemic, and that there is some sort of transparency and accountability in those decisions, the opportunity to use emergency ordinances should allow the government to be more agile in responding to the economic challenges. That's the hope, of course, and that's the government's position. So we wait and see, but in principle, the emergency could help, even though it might be unpalatable to many people.
So, Professor, then, political uncertainty aside, and earlier you were talking about how there are much bigger markets in this region. When we look at Malaysia, what does the country have to offer to foreign investors? And essentially, I guess the question here is, what can we do to draw in more investment?
I think what Malaysia has is a good position in the market, not just in Southeast Asia, but in Asia as a whole. Also, many foreign investors are very familiar with Malaysia, and so they're quite comfortable working here. But the government needs, in my view, to refresh its attitude to foreign investment, because I think over the last few years, this is not a new thing, this issue of concern about foreign investment, because actually net FDI flows have been falling since 2016 in Malaysia. And part of this is that Malaysian companies themselves are choosing to invest overseas. And some of the government-linked investment companies are also changing their strategic asset allocation in order to invest overseas to get higher returns. So the government needs, in my view, to refresh some of its approaches to attracting foreign direct investors. And it's not just a question of the business environment. It's also a question of the social environment. And will managers who are going to be working in major industrial investment in plants and new companies and so on, whether they're going to feel comfortable living here? These are the type of things that the government needs to look at. Tax incentives, of course, are also always on the agenda. But then you get into a form of tax competition. And under the current circumstances, because of the tightness of the budget, any changes in tax, the tax regime in order to attract FDI would have to be viewed as a long-term issue. I think it's time that government really takes this opportunity now to look again at the budget and to look at the, look what is likely to happen beyond the COVID period. And certainly FDI is going to be an extremely important component in that.
So one of those areas for FDI has generally been talked about is the auto sector, right? And there's this dream or at least this plan to try and make a Malaysia this ASEAN hub for auto, for example, whether it's EV or whatever comes after this. But we recently saw Hyundai closing its regional headquarters and training academy and moving over to Indonesia, not a small move by any measure. Do we have the capability to be that ASEAN hub for auto?
Yes. Capability is there in terms of skills, I mean, but the scale isn't there. And also the protectionist policies that have been put in place over the last many years, many decades, actually have not helped Malaysia in terms of its position as a regional hub. If you look at the industry figures, the Malaysian automobile industry produces around 600,000 units a year, roughly speaking. And they sell almost all of that in the domestic market. They sell about 550,000 units every year. And what that means is it's a pretty protected market for local producers. And they don't really need to look at exports. And so what that means is they don't need to invest in new models or in quality that would help them to compete in export markets. And that's actually an issue of protection. But if you take away that protection and expose these companies to competition, of course, they're going to be very upset about that. And it's one of the issues that has been so difficult in getting a free trade agreement, for example, with the European Union, because that's exactly what the European Union want. They want access to markets and particularly automotive markets. But on the other hand, it might be a spur to improving quality and creating an export market for these companies, because there's no real prospect of increasing the demand for Malaysian cars without looking at export markets. And if there's no increase in demand, then the automotive companies don't need to increase their supply. And part of that issue in terms of supply is also quality and the type of vehicles that they're offering.
Thanks so much for speaking with us this morning, Professor. That was Dr. Jeffrey Williams, Professor of the Malaysian University of Science and Technology, giving us a bit of insight into the fact that Malaysia seems to be losing out on the foreign investment front compared with our ASEAN neighbours.
Yeah, so I think looking at the figures he mentioned, net FDI has been falling since 2016. One factor could be our companies are investing abroad. So that's always good because they are expanding their influence and their market reach. But at the same time, we are obviously not bringing in enough FDIs. we are losing money to Vietnam and Indonesia, for example. You know, FDI is not just about money. It is really about the skills transfer as well. Because with skills transfer, then we have the opportunity to produce more local entrepreneurs who can move up the value chain.
Yes, so this is something that we will be watching very closely and bringing you updates as we get them ourselves as well. Right now, though, 7:30 news coming up, and then we're going to be speaking with Dr. Pradeep Taneja, Senior Lecturer at the University of Melbourne on US-China relations. So that's happening after the 7:30 news. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.